Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the analyst conference call, full year results 2018 of Bausch + Lomb SE. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulty hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone keypad for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Cornelius Ewerke, CEO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Welcome from my side and welcome to the FY18 full year and Q1 19 result presentation. I'm here with my colleague Lutz Scharpe, CFO, and Ian Dunster, Chief Marketing Officer of Bausch + Lomb. As you know, we have posted, and you've probably seen it, our FY18 presentation on our investor relations webpage, and we will guide you through the highlights over the next 60 minutes. So how do we do that? Lutz will start addressing the results FY18. Ian and I will very much focus looking forward, addressing the strategy, progress that we have made, and sharing with you first tangible results. And obviously provide a guidance for fiscal year 19. Before then, Lutz wraps up again with the Q1 results in 19. After the presentation, we are obviously available for Q&A. And to start, I would like to hand over to my colleague, Lutz.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Also from my side, and welcome to the analyst presentation for FYA. FY18 results as well as the Q1. If you turn to page 4 of the presentation, which you have hopefully downloaded from the website, you see our key highlights for the financial year 2018. As we have also informed the market before, it was a disappointing year for Bausch + Lomb. We could not reach the targets which we have set ourselves, so therefore we will report today results behind expectations, but in line with the last guidance which we issued mid of February 2019. The revenue increased by 14.4% to now 371.5 million euro. This is a significant double-digit increase as in prior years, slightly behind, of course, our expectations we have seen mid February. Our like-for-like, which is the same-store sales development, is negative by -1. This is mainly affected by Europe, but overall we see a reduction in guest counts, and we continue to see that in Q1. We will report about that later. The adjusted EBITDA closed at 29 million euro, including impact from the U.S. transaction, which is a margin decrease from 11.9% to 7.8%. Main reason for this development and not in line with original expectations is that the international openings, which we have opened in years 17 and 18, are trading below expectations, and that we had overall margin pressure in our core markets, Sweden, Netherlands, and Germany. I will report about a little bit about that later. The net income affected by a significant one-time impact of 65 million euro. Main reasons are three of them, and we have listed them on the page. First one, as already reported before, we booked impairment losses of 34.5 million euros relating to 26 stores, and you will find details in the annual account for that the impairment losses. We also have, due to the financial development and the forecast we have seen for the next years, reevaluated our deferred tax assets and reduced them significantly by 8.6 million euros. In addition, we have booked one-time costs for several reasons. Details you can find also in the annual account on page 53 and 54 in the amount of 22 million euros. Main reasons are accrual for loss-making contracts, bad debt accruals, which we booked on franchisees, as well as cost for our refinancing process. Also, details can be found in the presentation deck in the appendix on page 31. Overall, we opened in the last year 32 restaurants and we closed 6, So we came to a total number of restaurants in the end of the year of 231 restaurants. Moving on to page five of the deck, you see the sales development over the last year, 2018. You see that in all segments, nearly we could increase double digits, besides Germany, where our sales increased slightly by 3%. Overall group sales, as reported before, 14.4%. More important for us, of course, is the like-for-like development. Here we could report a small increase in Germany of 0.5%. As you may know, we have seen higher like-for-like increases in the first half of the year, so the last quarter of the year was negative for us in regards to the like-for-like development. In regards to Europe, we report a negative result of 2.8%, which is also negative. Main reasons for that, as stated before, are the developments in Sweden and Netherlands, and they have been affecting this segment of the group significantly. For rest of world, we report a break-even situation, so overall, the group is trading at a negative like-for-like development of -1%. As stated before, main reason for that is the guest count reduction, while ticket prices is increasing slightly. If you move on to page six of the presentation, you will see that overall the restaurant EBITDA, which is also important for us, has decreased as well. Why is that the case? Besides the growth we have seen, we have to account that some of our openings from the year 17 and 18 don't produce positive EBITDAs and therefore affecting our EBITDA development on restaurant level. This of course has 100% impact and also to the adjusted EBITDA, both of them decreasing, while the restaurant EBITDA is decreasing by 12.3%, the group EBITDA reduced by 32.2%. Excluding US, we have a slightly lower decrease and report an EBITDA of 29 million. The margin overall for the restaurant business down from 61 to 12.2, also not in line with our original expectations, so something where we have to work on in the next year, and that's something where Cornelius will focus on in his presentation later on. The group margin reduced to 7.1%, excluding the US transaction, also decreased significantly below our expectations. If you move on one page and you see the development for the relevant segments, you see that we have reduced margins in all segments as well. Germany, which is still our biggest segment with reported country, still with 152 million sales, now at a 20.6 million euro EBITDA, including franchise, and with a reduced margin of 213.5%, in line with the reduced like-for-like margin, which moved down from 40.6 to 12.9. Main reason for that development is the significant increase in labor costs, which we have seen over last year. The tariff agreement, which was signed with our partners, oversees an increase of over 7% of a 24-month period, starting in the beginning of year 2018. These increase could not be covered up by price increases. As you know, we have issued 3 price increases during the year 2018, but we have seen also guest count decreases in line with that, and therefore the like-for-like was not increasing, and the margin pressure increased to the German business. In Europe, you see that we have also seen a reduction in margin from 19.9 to 14.8%, and the EBITDA down from 31 to 27.5. Main reason for that country is, besides the positive development in our French market, which is growing in EBITDA, we have seen reduction in margins in EBITDAs in Sweden and Netherlands, as well as we have a loss-making business in Denmark, and a significant pressure on our EBITDA in the UK, where we opened stores in Scotland, but also in the London market. Overall, the like-for-like margin also slightly decreased from 18.1% to 16.2%. Rest of world, the only segment contributing positive to the EBITDA, up from 1.6 to 2.5. You should consider that we have the first-time consolidation impact of our Australian business, which affected included in that result, and therefore it's not an organic growth, it's an acquisition growth. Margin drop here from 14.3 on like-for-like basis to 11.5. Moving on to page 8, which is maybe the most important message for today, we can confirm that we have secured our financing. All necessary contracts have now been signed, and therefore we were able to issue the accounts with a clean audit opinion from our auditor, PwC. As you can see, just for illustration purposes, we have invested heavily over the last 18 months, from the mid of 2017 to the end of 2018. The IPO proceeds, which were around 85 million, and the capital increase, around 20 million, contributed around 110 million, 100 million equity into the company, which was also invested in new openings. Total investment over that period, including acquisition amount, up 209 million. For the next years, for this year, we expect improvement in operating cash flow. You see the red box under FY19, but still we will invest heavily into the business, more than, of course, less than last year, nearly half, but still a significant number, and therefore we will still expect a negative free cash flow. Latest from FY20, which is starting next gen, we want to then balance out our operating cash flow and our CapEx cash flow by further reduction in CapEx, but still improvement in operating cash flow to come to a first-time positive free cash flow environment, latest by the financial year 2020. To secure this bridge until we will be positive free cash flow, we have secured financing with our banks as well as our shareholders. These contain a few items which have been described here in detail on the lower part of the page. First of all, we have secured our existing credit facility of 200 million euro. The increase option, which was foreseen originally for this year, has been deleted. Major shareholders committed with a shareholder loan, which is subordinated, up to an amount of 17.7 million euro. Part of that could be drawn already by the company. Banks have provided 12.9 million by reopening existing credit lines to the total amount of 200 million euro. We also have agreed new covenants, which is now a 12-month rolling EBITDA, as well as a liquidity covenant, which will secure the softer covenants, development of the company in the next 24 months. Overall, based on our calculations, which were supported by KPMG, the financing is secured until May 2020, when the current credit facility runs out. We also have assumed that latest by that year, we will be in the position to refinance the business, as our covenant will be back to 3x area, which has been before and which is still on the target overall for the company. With this initial words on the disappointing year 2018 and the outlook for the next years, I hand over to Cornelius Ewerke, CEO of the company.
Thank you, Lutz. So, obviously a disappointing year for all of us. And I think it was important that we take a quick step back to really understand how did we end up in this situation and how do we get out of it? Because I think for me, as a new CEO, the focus is very much using the analysis to really define a new strategy and making sure that the team is very focused on executing this new strategy. When we look at the learnings, as you can see on page 12, on page 10, all the initiatives we had post-IPO were completely in line with the strategy that we had announced, but it just put enormous pressure on the organization and obviously on financial resources. There was such a strong focus on growth that we maybe forgot a bit the conversion of sales aspect. And in addition to growing our footprint internationally, we also rolled out a lot of innovations projects, kind of 129 takeaway and deliveries, added a lot of complexity to our business model. At the same time, we tried to become innovation leader, rolling out an app, order terminals. So I think this really put a lot of pressure on the organization. And unfortunately, to be quite honest, the rapid expansion in the new countries had an unfavorable CapEx profile. So we did spend a lot of CapEx. We did not have enough restaurants in franchising. And in addition to all the other investments in the new IT systems, new concept developments and everything, obviously this led to this unsatisfying results. So what were the learnings? I think accelerating growth with minor focus on profitability didn't help. And to be quite honest, we also analyzed or maybe underestimated a bit going into new countries simultaneously did not help the ramp-up profile. And it really led to a margin dilution. When we look at the openings in Denmark, when we look at the openings in Scotland, we had a proven model, which we rolled out, but it just simply did not work in these countries. And therefore, and I will address it coming to the new strategy, we obviously made some changes. So when I joined, I think the most important thing, and I've shared it with you, with most of you in detail, the most important thing was to readjust the existing strategy. And I really think the conclusion of all the analysis was very simple. Vapiano continues to be a very successful brand and business model for growth, but it certainly requires a clear change in priority. I think in order to improve the situation, the management will focus obviously on the revised strategy, which means slower expansion, but accelerated profit improvements. And I think it is important that we share with you these four pillars, which will then lead to net income profitability in 2021. When you flip to the page 11, you will see that we have actually made some progress. Because while we were working on the financing of the company, we were simultaneously implementing and starting to execute the new strategy. You can see on the timeline, I was appointed in December 18. We started the sale of our US business, which was in line with our strategy to really review our equity share in countries outside of Europe. We started to communicate, especially internally as well, and to obviously press analysts and shareholders, the revised strategy. What does it really mean? Are we still a growth company? Where's our focus and everything? So we were on a little roadshow, and the most important thing, we explained it to all the employees that they were helping us to obviously execute this. In March and April, we took the initial steps of our restructuring of portfolio. We had the first closure. We started to refranchising. We had a lot of meeting with new partners who showed huge interest in franchising, and that's something we're going to continue focus on. But around March, we also invested in the company, bringing our new chief marketing officer on board, investing really, and you will see it later, in some key positions here in the center, whether it was a director of marketing, director of sales, director commercial, director operations. We just felt that we had to strengthen the management capabilities, because once you analyze everything, you really want to make sure that based on benchmarking, you start to execute in a standardized way. Then obviously the highlight for us in June, the new financing set in place, which obviously guarantees financing until 2022, which is very important for us, the company, and it really gives us the required financing to execute a new strategy. Because if you start restructuring the business, it will cost money, and therefore this was very, very important. And now we can really look forward. Because for the last 6 months, when you look at it, everybody was speculating, looking back, discussing bad results. Now the key focus is really looking forward and making sure that everybody is very disciplined by executing the strategy here from the management. As you can see on page 12, the new strategy is based on four pillars: sustainable and profitable expansion, and I will go into more detail, but what it basically means is to review our equity share outside Europe. I don't think there's a need for us, being a German-based company, that we run our own restaurant in China. I think there are better ways to do it. We'll probably find a master franchisee who could then develop the brand in China as well. That's probably a better strategy for us. I think overall franchising, it is important. We currently have 90 franchising stores out of 231 by the end of 18. I think there's a chance for us to increase franchising. It's not just in Germany, but overall, I think future growth will be more asset-light model and obviously focusing on franchising. Overall, if you're in a transition, and we are definitely in a transition, slowing down expansion is good. We're still a growth company. You can see it in the guidance, opening 10 to 15 stores, but I'd rather have 10 to 15 profitable store openings than chasing a restaurant count and opening 30 or 40 restaurants a year. I think we need to consolidate first so that we are then able to grow again. The second pillar, it is the operational excellence with focus on guest centricity. I think that's very important for a concept that is in 33 countries. We need a very standardized execution. We need to address the pain points of our guests, and that's definitely speed of service, especially during peak times, and I will talk about it a bit later. And overall, we need to reduce the complexity. To be quite honest, we were just too complex, whether it was in internal processes, whether it was in facing the customer, our menu, we allowed ourselves just to become too complex, and I think we need to reduce that. Third point, sharpen the Vapiano USP, and Ian will talk about it, because despite all the other initiatives, I think the focus needs to be on guest count development. We've got to increase the share of customers. It's very simple. We need to get back into positive like-for-like territory. As you can see, even in the Q1 results, we're still suffering, obviously, image of Vapiano, especially in the last 6 to 9 months, has definitely suffered, and we can see a link to our guest decline, and that's something we need to address. We need to enhance the brand appeal and everything, but Ian will go into the details later. And the last point is very important for me. Obviously, when you are in a transition, you need to reduce a bit the staff, especially in the support center, because everything was built for growth. Since we are slowing down growth, you need to also make adjustments in your support center. But at the same time, you need to invest in capabilities that have not been here before. And for me, the most important thing, if you want to have a standardized execution, you need to strengthen the analytical capabilities in the support center. You can only make sound decisions once you have analyzed it, once you have benchmarked, and then you can roll things out. So I think we need to establish really this commercial mindset, simplify the execution, and establish a more performance-based company culture. I think we need to become much more earning-driven and not just growth targets, and therefore we need to simplify the organization, but definitely add skill set that was maybe not here before in all the divisions. When you come to page 13, I would like to share with you a bit the progress we have made on the new strategy. As said, we communicated it back in February, and then we started really to work on it. On refranchising, we did not have a lot of franchise openings in Germany. The last franchising opening in Germany was 2.5 years ago. So we went back to our franchising community. We also reached out to potential new partners, and Ulm is the first restaurant that will open with a new partner, and he will, on the long term, then open other restaurants as well. We have received quite a lot of offers from existing franchising partners, which I think is important. So they believe in the brand because they do run a very successful Vapiano on their own, and they would like to invest further. And we are currently in discussions how we can do that, how we basically transfer or sell existing assets and transfer it into franchising. The good thing is about this strategy of refranchising, it will reduce pressure on our CapEx. As you have seen in Lutz's presentation, we have spent 68 million last year. I mean, it's not sustainable. We can't continue spending this amount of CapEx. So therefore, we had reduction on CapEx. In the last analyst call, we had said from the assumed 70 million, we would reduce it to 40 million. I see more CapEx spend this year around 30 million, and I would like to further reduce CapEx, but therefore, obviously, the franchising partners need to invest in new growth. A second point, which is important as part of this sustainable and profitable expansion, is obviously exiting loss makers. I think as an operator, it's completely normal if you open 10, 20 restaurants that you also look at your underperforming assets and that you make these difficult choices, whether you invest further in these locations or where you believe that maybe it would be better to close a restaurant. And we have done that, and we will further look and review the profitability of our restaurants, and there might be further closures. But we did close our Glasgow store. In order to reduce CapEx, we even negotiated with existing landlords, whether it was in London, Canary Wharf location, or two locations in Germany, not to invest in these locations, and we basically surrendered our leases. When there is a lease that expires, and we are faced with either reinvesting in the existing locations, if there are certain ROI decisions to be made and where we feel that it's not worth it to invest, we will also not to extend lease agreements. We have therefore closed one of our four restaurants in Munich, and we will have further restaurants where we are not extending our lease. So we're looking very carefully over the next couple of months, the month to come, whether we're going to make this decision or not. We are also negotiating with a lot of landlords more favorable rent structures right now, and I think having this focus on our portfolio could lead maybe to a lower restaurant count overall, but definitely an increased profitability. When you flip to page 14, this is the focus on the countries outside Europe. We started with the sale of the USA. As you know, we had signing of the deal took place in January. We had assumed closure at the end of March. We have allowed our partner to extend this deadline because focus for us is not just the purchase price. Focus for us is the development fee so that he's able to develop further Vapianos in these five states. Therefore, he needs to raise a certain amount of money, and we allowed him to extend the deadline, and we're looking forward, obviously, in the next couple of weeks to close this deal. In Australia, where you, as you know, where we own 75%, we believe that if somebody is in Australia investing in the business and then developing the business based in Australia, probably makes more sense than us running it here from Germany. We have signed two NDAs. There is an interest in developing of the brand. We are reviewing currently some offers, and we expect the divestment to take place in 2020. China is only one restaurant, but obviously a huge opportunity for us. As you know, there are a lot of Chinese investors right now looking into European brands. I think we can take advantage. We have also signed an NDAs with interested parties. They are reviewing the business model right now, and this is also something we are foreseeing for 2020. So I think we're making progress on all these three countries. We're making progress on franchising, and we're making progress on exiting loss makers. Coming to the second point, operational excellence with the focus on guest centricity. What does it really mean? When we look at what the guests are telling us, I think there was definitely a need to much leaner processes. We needed to review our customer journey, and we also looked for ways to improve our margin management. When you, for example, see that we operate 9 restaurants in Berlin, that we operate 10 restaurants in Vienna, that we operate 7 restaurants in Stockholm, I think there are ways to improve our profitability. We look at shared production. We really
It would certainly help us going forward to lower kitchen footprint and lower CapEx. I think shared production is something very important if you grow a brand internationally. So far, we are depending very much on every single employee, yeah, cutting every single vegetables themselves. To be quite honest, I think there are smarter ways going forward to have a standardized execution, reducing waste, and really have going forward lower CapEx spend, because when you look at our kitchen setup right now, it's oversized, it's too big, and it's not helping us growing the model going forward if it continues to have footprints of 800 to 900 square meters. So I think we need to review the overall operational execution, and it will certainly help us. The big focus for me personally has always been gross profit increase. We have invested in IT and materials management, so we should see some output, and we actually can see it after the first 3 months. Very encouraging results, already 1% better compared to last year. So we do see that we have an increased transparency and therefore can better control our cost structure. Speed of service. Second point, most important thing when you ask our customers right now, our guests, are two things. They can't eat together, and speed of service. So we're addressing both points with the new customer journey. You have heard the word Vapiano 3.0. What does it actually mean? We do see very encouraging results in our pilot. We do have pilot restaurants, and the normal customer journey in the past has been you're receiving a pager at the pizza station, and then you go back while other guests or your friends are queuing up at the pasta station and the salad station. So in order to have simultaneous eating experience, we are just extending the buzzer, the pager, it's very simple, from the pizza station to the pasta station and the salad station. So this is a pilot. We're testing it. We have early, very encouraging results. It doesn't afford huge investment. We don't need to remodel the kitchen. We just need to use one very good element of the Vapiano experience and just extend it to the other stations. We're doing it in the restaurants, which is right below our support center, so we can experience it firsthand. We are asking our guests, and more than 80% really like the new concept. So does it mean that we're rolling it out? We have continuously to test it. We are fine-tuning it, but it's certainly modeled for rollout, which doesn't require further investments. In addition, we have new concepts. We do have mini concepts. We do have a concept where you don't have a kitchen line anymore, where you have a central kitchen block. This is helping us going forward to build smaller Vapianos. It doesn't help us to address the issue in our existing 220 restaurants. So we need for both models an answer, and we're working on both models, and we do see encouraging results. So I think we're making progress on this front as well. So these were kind of the first initiatives I wanted to touch on: sustainable and profitable expansion and operational excellence. I think for the next, and probably the most important one for all of us, is the next strategic pillar, sharpen the Vapiano USP, and I would like to hand over to Ian so that he can walk us through what he would like to do.
Good morning. Clearly there's a lot to do to turn around the negative guest count, but let me start with a number of positive perspectives that I see coming into the business. The first one, very important for me, we are already a high volume business. You know, we average significantly over 4,000 customers a week, which for me, and comparing with most other restaurant brands, is high volume. And that is indication to me that whilst we need to grow our guest count, we start with strong guest appeal. The other thing is we are in a good segment. Fast casual is a growth segment. You know, Italian cuisine is one of the most popular food styles, so we are positioned for growth there. And the other thing is, you know, there are many areas of improvement and development we've identified. So it's not as if we're looking at it thinking, what do we do? We're saying we've got a strong base and we've got areas of improvement. Now, I've been involved with the brand. I started initially as a strategy consultant back in December, looking at what the brand stood for. And I was invited to come on board at the beginning of March to help with the turnaround process. So in the last few weeks, Now, firstly, we've been rebuilding capability in the team structure. We've been developing the brand plan for the next 18 months. And we've been really understanding the key strengths of the brand proposition. What does Vapiano stand for? And let me just focus on that, because there are so many positive distinctions of this brand. You know, it is a brand that serves fresh, premium pasta at affordable prices. And importantly, we have, for our guests, great freedom and control of how they personalize their meal and the whole experience. That freedom is very important to our guests and for us to exploit. And the third area, you know, we do offer a very stylish, vibrant, modern Italian atmosphere and offer. So there are many, many strengths of this brand to develop from. We are also importantly in the fast casual sector. And what does that mean? It means we offer our guests high quality food in a relatively quick time period at very affordable prices. Now, and in that market, we are clearly competing against two other big groups, QSR brands and casual dining brands. And we need to be relevant to the needs, guest needs in both areas. So in QSR, we're focusing on the lunch business where guests do want speed and value. And in casual dining, that's more even focus, which is more about the social atmosphere, the informal occasion and experience. And the benefit of Vapiano is we can grow and be relevant in both of those stages. So consequently, our marketing development is focused on both short-term and medium-term areas. In the short term, simply we need to strengthen the marketing calendar. We need to rebuild our image and awareness using primarily digital and PR channels. I think Cornelius mentioned, you know, especially in the German market, that there have been quite some negative press related to the financial restructuring, and we can see the evidence of that has impacted on guest perceptions, and we need to improve that. And then we just need to build a competent and effective, you know, sales and marketing plan around implementation of specials programs, events activity, reasons to visit, exploiting the potential of the takeaway, delivery market growth. There are many, you know, basic levers to work and develop on. And then there's a lot of work to do on brand evolution. So from a positive base, but there are many areas of enhancement. That includes a menu and bar evolution, you know, but both a product and a service model. How we strengthen and develop our digital and CRM programs. Speed of service, you know, that is both using technology and order processes. Building the evening atmosphere, you know, how do we get that kind of nice, lounging, easy place, that social place that people want to come to in the evening through both atmosphere and reasons to visit. And generally enhancing the brand model. You know, we're looking at all aspects of the guest experience, the product, the service, the design, the communication. And clearly, you know, we started from a good base, but there's much we need to do and can do to improve both the guest experience and also, you know, be very mindful of cost. You know, this is a relatively high cost, complex business. We need to take that complexity away, as Cornelius mentioned, and make sure that all the costs that we have in the business are very directed in improving the guest experience and removing those costs where they do not add the right value to the guest. So a lot to do, but many positive platforms to grow from, and so we're now getting a team in place that can deliver that.
Thank you, Ian. Let me quickly come to the next point of our strategy, which obviously is investing in our Vapianisti culture. What does it really mean? Despite all organizational restructuring, yeah, which obviously is necessary if it was designed for expansion, and now we need to slow down expansion, so obviously we need to address the size of our support center. But despite all restructuring, I think the most important thing is that we also invest in the support center capabilities. You can see it on page 17. We not only brought Ian on board, we made sure that we had a very strong new CEO for the international franchising business, because if you want to grow franchising, you need to obviously have the right people. We have hired a director of operations in Germany, director in marketing, director in commercial and sales. So why did we focus so much on these two areas? We believe that obviously marketing brings them in, operations brings them back. It's very easy. We need just better decision making here in the center, and this comes from analytical expertise. And we have identified the right candidates. They all came on board over the last 8 weeks. They're now in the onboarding program. but we are definitely looking forward, and we are very certain that they will help us in the turnaround. I think overall, every time you're in a transition, there needs to be a mindset shift. And I think we all need to have a much more commercial-minded way of executing. We have therefore addressed the bonus scheme for all managers, and I think everything is, not everything, but at least 70% is adopted towards more financial targets. It will help us that we're all following the same goal. It's the same bonus scheme from the senior management down to restaurant managers. They need to understand that this is about improving profitability, and I think it will definitely sharpen the commercial mindset. Also, the central analysis and decision-making becomes more sound, and it will help us making the right decisions going forward. I did talk about the organizational restructuring. So far, we have reduced our support center cost by more than 30 FTEs. How did we do that? There's always natural fluctuation where we made sure that we maybe not rehire every position. At the same time, we look very carefully at the size of certain departments and made the decision maybe to reduce it. Is this final? No, I think we can still adjust here and there, but I think we are definitely getting into the right direction. I think for us it would also be beneficial if we bring everybody together, especially if you change your model from a decentralized into a more centralized decision making. So therefore we are reviewing offices in Berlin and Luxembourg. Our office in Berlin we have closed down and moved everything to Cologne. We are reviewing the same thing for Luxembourg, because we believe we would rather have a strong team here all sitting together to work on a combined goal. So this was the quick overview on these four new strategy pillars and obviously first results. Let me summarize. I think there's a clear strategy in place. We have evidenced the first results. And most important thing, financing is secured, which will give us the required financials, because restructuring sometimes will cost money. And I'm happy that we are made progress so far. And when you look at page 18, you can see a bit more the outlook. Obviously, we have given you a guidance that for 19, our adjusted EBITDA will decrease. It's part of our transition year. Our net income will improve. Free cash flow will improve as well. To give you a bit more outlook over the next 12 to 24 months, 24 and 36 months, we see in all areas improvements, whether it's an adjusted EBITDA, net income, or free cash flow. We have discussed it already, and Lutz has shared it. Our goal is obviously to become net income profitable in 2021, have a positive cash flow in 20. I think this will get us back on track, and that's where we want, and that's where we need to be. Going to page 19 is the guidance. We are looking at net sales between 390 and 420 million euros. We're looking at an adjusted EBITDA 20 to 25 million. We're looking at like-for-likes of minus 2 to minus 4. We had a difficult Q1. I think Ian touched on the a bit negative image. We had the refinancing process, took 6 months, and there were a lot of speculations in the German press, and I think that's probably more perception than anything else. But seeing the trend right now, I think we need to guide a bit higher negative like-for-likes than we have seen in fiscal year 18. We're still planning 10 to 15 openings, which I feel is a good number. If we have more franchising, fine. If we have less own restaurant openings, is okay. Most of the openings will be in France, Austria, and in Germany. So, again, following our strategy and sticking to our core markets, I think gives us a good balance going forward. So I would like to hand over
to talk about Q1 before then obviously open up for Q&A after Lutz's final presentation.
Good. Just sticking slightly on page 19, just as most of you have asked the question before, we have of course time also included our guidance, including IFRS adjustments. You see that we see an impact of around 40 million euro on the guidance in regards to IFRS 16. We have details in the report on the annual statement, so if you have a look at page 100 of the annual accounts, you will see all the detailed calculation on IFRS 16 impact. Debt of the company will increase around 300 million, slightly below that, the same for assets. So that are the main impacts for IFRS 16. Nevertheless, we have agreed that we will report on the way forward, excluding IFRS 16 in our key KPIs, as they may be influenced only by that balance sheet item changes. So moving on to page 21 and following, which is the Q1, just a quick update on Q1. We have seen, again, a double-digit sales increase, mainly driven by the openings as well as the acquisition in Australia. As you know, the acquisition took place only in Q2. In Germany, again, around growth of 3%. Europe 13.2%, and as I stated before, rest of world 111%. Like for like for us were, as stated before, not so positive, more disappointing. We see that we have negative like for likes in all segments, being Germany with -2.8%, Europe -4.6%, and rest of world 0.9%. We have, of course, seen a certain impact, especially in the German market, from the press releases and also from the interview we had in mid-February. So there we have to work on, and that's exactly where Ian and his team will focus on in the next year. And the same is also the case for Europe. Overall, the group reports negative like-for-like of -3.5%, and that's also the main reason for our more conservative guidance for the next year. In regards to EBITDA, on restaurant level and on group level, reductions on double-digit numbers in regard to percentage points. Main reasons, there are two. One is, of course, the like-for-like development, which we have stated before. But in addition, we have a lot of negative impacts from the openings, especially from the year 2018, which are not contributing positively to our adjusted restaurant EBITDA. Therefore, we could only report an EBITDA of 3.2 million for Q1, and that also is in line with our full year guidance of 20 to 25 million. Of course, with the number of exits or loss-making stores, that number might increase in the next month, but first we have to work on the program to reduce the loss-makers, as Cornelius stated before. The same applies for the segment overview. I don't want to repeat the number. You can see them in detail on page 23. But overall, we see margin reduction in all segments, also reduction in the like-for-like cohort. I think what you should consider that in the like-for-like cohort, we now have the 2017 openings included. So meaning that some of the restaurants which still are in the ramp-up phase are contributing to the like-for-like margin, and they therefore, as some of them are very negative or slight low-digit numbers, this margin goes down in Germany, for example, from 15.3 to 10.7, and in Europe from 13.7 to 10%. Overall, the start into the year was difficult for us, as stated before. We are working now on to improve over the year the performance, that's the dedication of the new team, including myself, and I'm happy to answer detailed questions also on the Q1 development within the call. So therefore, this is the end of our presentation. We are happy to answer your questions, and I would hand over to the speaker from our provider to guide you through the Q&A session.
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question received is from Mark Jarvison from Pareto Securities. Your line is now open, sir.
Yes, thanks very much, and thank you for a quite detailed presentation today. You've obviously spent several months really going through the portfolio. Things have been changing all the time. As we stand at the moment, how many loss makers or cash burners are there within the portfolio? And if you take the top 20 or so loss makers, you know, how significant are they in terms of losing total?
Yeah, thanks for your question. Did I understand your name correctly?
Mark.
It's Mark.
It's Mark.
Mark.
Hi.
Okay. So for the Q1 EBITDA development, we see loss-makers, including the openings, we have a number of stores around 141, and we have around 30 of them producing negative EBITDA before franchise fees.
Yeah. Okay.
And the remaining stores are obviously franchising stores, so we're talking about our own.
Yeah, but the remaining 110 are positive in EBITDA.
Yeah.
And the main drivers for negative EBITDA are the two Copenhagen stores, the two Scottish stores, and one store in London and one store in Berlin. If you add them together, they count for the first one, they count for around 40 to 50% already of the negative EBITDA, without going into detail on numbers per store.
No, that's a good guide. Thank you.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on the telephone keypad mark now. The next question received is from James Roland Clark from Barclays. Your line is now open, sir.
Good morning. I've got a few questions, please. On the covenants, presumably they are measured every quarter. Could you give us an idea of roughly what the hurdle rates are on the covenants per quarter, and does that change over time? Secondly, what is the liquidity covenant measurement? A third question is, can you guide at all on interest costs for this year and 2020, given the additional financing you now have in place? And finally, you've got to do some work on enhancing your brand appeal in Germany and potentially, you know, in the core markets in Europe. So could you give us an idea on the extra spend that might be needed in terms of marketing and whether that is within your guidance? I presume so, but could you give us an idea on the quantum that you're going to need to spend on marketing? Thank you.
Yeah, I will start with the financial question. Good morning, James. Welcome to London, or hello to London. And then Ian will take the marketing question. So on the covenants, we have two covenants in place now. One is the EBITDA covenant and one is the liquidity covenant. We don't have a net debt to EBITDA covenant anymore. And we still will report the net debt to EBITDA covenant for transparency purposes, but it's not binding for the bank agreement anymore. The banking covenants, which we agreed, is on EBITDA in line with our business plan. So we need to meet, including, of course, a certain kind of security deduction, the EBITDA of our business plan, which we put forward, and of course it's in line with what we have reported today and for the financial year 19. In regards to the liquidity covenant, we have a certain kind of minimum liquidity which we need to meet, of course, if you're coming below that covenant, we need to take extra measures to secure liquidity for the company. I cannot give any details on the size of the liquidity covenant, but it's not a double digit, it's a single digit liquidity covenant. In regards to the interest cost for your model, for the bank loans, we will now have an interest rate of 4.75% going forward, and this is a cash interest. And for the shareholder loans, which you have seen in the deck, we have an interest between 11 to 13%. That is a non-cash interest as it is paid in the end of the period, being November 2020. Also, the details for the shareholder loans are disclosed in detail in the annual accounts. Is this clarifying your point?
Yeah, that's helpful. It does. And just on the net debt EBITDA, that is it for internal purposes, is not for your, you know, it's not binding for covenant purposes. Is that adjusted for IFRS 16 or not?
We are reporting in our annual accounts, not for adjusted for IFRS 16. We will report the same one as we have reported before. Including IFRS 16, you can add around 40 million EBITDA and 300 million debt, so the covenant will completely look different. So that's not something which we're going to report on the way forward.
Great, thanks.
Okay, I hand over to Ian.
Yeah, very simply, we have about 4 million marketing spend at the moment. And our first focus is on the quality and effectiveness of that spend. So we are not assuming at the moment that we need to increase the marketing budget significantly. What we do want to do is make sure that the money we have is used smart and effectively on our activity program.
Okay, great, thank you. And if I may just follow up with one broader question. Have you thought about the shape of like-for-likes for this year? Obviously, still, they appear to be getting worse, and we're in Q2 where presumably the same brand issues you faced in Germany with some pretty negative news flow will be an issue, and that may also continue into Q3. So how are you planning to hit that sort of -2% to -4% given you've just done -3.5%?
Yeah, I think for Germany you are correct. We see still some negative development in Germany for the recent weeks due to the press coverage. In regards to the rest of the world, we see slightly better numbers over the last weeks, as we had a very hot summer last year. Overall, we expect not a big change on our like-for-like for the Q1 to the number we are seeing for Q2. But overall, in the second half of the year, we have planning slight improvements based on the marketing and sales program Ian put in place, and therefore we see that average between 2 and 4% next.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on the telephone keypad now. As far as there are no further questions, I hand back to Mr. Iwicke.
Yes, thank you for listening in, and thank you for the questions asked. Obviously, you can ask us or contact us or call us directly if you want to have further insights. I would like to thank every participant in the call today and would like to thank the team and wish you a good day. Thank you so much. Thank you. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.